Welcome. This is the Fly Fishing Journeys podcast with host Rob Giannino, where we have great conversation with really awesome experts from within the fly fishing community. You see, the fly fishing lifestyle is a journey, and we're glad you're on this journey with us. Check out flyfishingjourneys.com for more podcasts, and please subscribe on your favorite podcast player. Here's your host, Rob Giannino.
What's going on, everyone? I'm excited to bring you this chat with Nick Roberts of the Bonefish Tarpon Trust. Nick is a wealth of knowledge and a blast to talk to about all things bonefish, tarpon, and permit. And don't sleep on him when it comes to trout and all other species. This guy loves to fish and loves to travel, so I know you will love this episode. Speaking of travel, I leave for Patagonia in just a few weeks, and I'm excited to bring you reports from Argentina in early December. Let me know on social if you've been to Patagonia and some flies that I should be prepared for. I will get you all the details for a possible curated hosted trip for us in 2024. Are you interested in Patagonia? What other trips are on your bucket list? We offer very select spots on some of these trips we take. Check out the travel page on flyfishingjourneys.com if you have interest in traveling with us. Right now, the major destinations available are Iceland for trout, char, sea trout, and salmon, Alaska for Pacific salmon, rainbows, and Dolly Varden, and the Bahamas for bonefish, permit, and tarpon. These are curated trips during prime seasons and are set aside just for us. Spots are limited, so drop me an email or a direct message, and we can chat more about your goals in fly fishing travel. Now let's jump into this episode with Nick. Before we jump back into the podcast, here's a short word from one of our fantastic sponsors. Are you a guide, a lodge, or a product manufacturer in the fly fishing or outdoor industry? I want to introduce you to and highlight Cross Current Insurance. Their entire team are great people and experts in their field. They have a guide insurance program that is amazing and very affordable. If you are a lodge or retailer, they also have programs tailored to your needs. These guys fish and are in the outdoors, so they know the industry and the landscape. To get more information on a program that's perfect for you, find them at crosscurrentinsurance.com. All right, great. And we are live here in Atlanta, and I'm excited to have Nick Roberts, who is the editor for the Bonefish Tarpon Journal, and he's also part of the Bonefish Tarpon Trust. Nick, thanks for being on the podcast.
Thanks, Rob. Thanks for having me. Great to see you again.
Yeah, my pleasure. You're actually a repeat guest here on the podcast.
I am, yeah.
So thanks for being back. And you were previously on the podcast at the IFTD,
yes,
the International Fly Tackle Dealer Show, where, you know, promoting the Bonefish Tarpon Trust is an incredibly important organization. So we'd like to talk a bit about the Bonefish Tarpon Trust, what value that brings to our fisheries and our waters, mm-hmm, and also a bit about your backstory. So, Nick, how long have you actually been part of the Bonefish Tarpon Trust?
I have been part of it since 2016.
And your role is the editor of the journal?
And director of marketing and communication.
Well, first of all, what drives us to saltwater? Why are we, as fly fishers, so fired up to get out in the saltwater?
I would have to say it's the sight fishing element of it.
Okay.
It's being on the flats, in the clear water, shallow water, seeing the fish, intercepting them with flies. Yeah, I think it's the visual element of it.
So you can kind of see it's that clear,
yeah,
water.
Yep.
Now, does the Bonefish Tarpon Trust, otherwise we'll just say BTT,
yep,
a lot of people,
yeah,
prefer
it. BTT is perfect.
Does it have like a certain geographic coverage area, or is it just wherever bonefish are in the world?
We focus on Florida, the southeast U.S. for tarpon, over across the Gulf to Texas,
yep,
and then throughout the Caribbean basin for bonefish, tarpon, and permit.
Okay. And what is the main function of the organization?
It is to conserve bonefish, tarpon, permit, and any habitats that they use throughout their life cycles.
So it's a conservation.
It's conservation, science-driven, conservation-based, and it's also membership-based in that we have a growing membership. We're also supported by great companies, Patagonia, Orvis, a lot of the leading fly fishing companies, boat manufacturers like Maverick, Hell's Bay,
yeah,
private donors, and then grants as well.
Okay. You guys are using a ton of science,
mm-hmm,
both tagging and reporting, to conserve the bonefish and the tarpon and the permit.
Right. So BTT was established about 22 years ago, and at that time, there were very few studies on bonefish. So there was very little known at that time So a lot of the initial studies were just achieving a baseline of knowledge. You know, where do these fish spawn? How do they spawn? Yeah. What's their life cycle like? What habitats are essential to their lives? And so really before VTT came along, there was very little known about it. And so over the years, as that knowledge has amassed, that's allowed us, you know, a much better understanding of life cycle and what we need to do to preserve the flats fishery.
Where do bonefish spawn?
Bonefish, that's a good question. It's a pretty epic feat of nature. So bonefish congregate near shore by the thousands. So we've tracked them swimming up to 70 miles to a spawning site that they all know where to meet up. And then once they're in that school called a PSA, pre-spawn aggregation, they'll swim offshore at night after filling their air bladders with air by gulping at the surface near shore. Then they'll dive down in water that's thousands of feet deep. They'll dive to around 250 feet, and then they'll surge back up quickly. And it's believed that the change in air pressure helps expel the eggs and sperm, and then the fertilization occurs there. It's called broadcast spawning. And then after that, the larvae that hatch are swept in the ocean current and have a, you know, very minor swimming ability, and then they're dispersed by the currents, basically. And then they settle in sandy and muddy bays, and then they transform into juvenile bonefish. So it's an incredible feat that these bonefish know how to meet up, where to meet up,
right,
and then all, you know, head offshore together.
That's incredible. So the first part of this is pre-spawn. It's like this giant meetup.
Exactly.
You can have like a conclave. You can put it on like the internet.
Exactly. Yep.
We all meet up at a spot.
It's an expo. Yeah.
And then they just dive offshore, dive to the bottom. They gulp the air. They dive to the bottom, and they just their thing on the way up.
Yeah. Offshore, they won't go all the way to the bottom, but they'll dive to that 250-foot range.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then they'll surge up, and as they're surging up, they're expelling that genetic material.
250 feet down?
Huge, yes.
I've never even heard of that before.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible. I mean, we've tracked them doing that.
Yeah, it's like an average fly fisherman for bonefish. You just think, the bonefish are always on the flats.
Exactly. That's what's fascinating about it is they'll leave the flats, meet up at these sites, and then head offshore together. And there are multiple sites, you know. It's not like all the bonefish in the Caribbean meet at one place. They're spread out.
What time of year do bonefish spawn?
They spawn fall to spring, and kind of depending on where they are, that's like the general range. But
okay. So it's not like, you know, with rainbows, you just kind of stay away from the spawning grounds in the spring on the reds, or the same thing with the browns in the fall.
Yeah, there's an analogy you could make in that it's not good to fish, obviously, for reds, for trout that are spawning or pre-spawn.
Yeah.
And it's the same with bonefish. So whenever they're in these PSAs, which is the pre-spawning aggregation, which is those schools of thousands, it's definitely not advisable to fish them because one big problem is sharks are naturally drawn to those PSAs. So when you hook a fish, it's bait, essentially shark bait when you let it go.
Mm.
So the only purpose in fishing those is for researchers who are collecting egg samples, taking blood samples, and then tagging fish.
Now, where are the headquarters of the BTT?
We are based in Miami, Florida.
Okay. And like at the home office, what's there? Is there research? Is there, you guys are actually doing your experiments right there on property, or how does this work?
So we have like a central office in Coconut Grove, which is part of Miami near Biscayne Bay. And then we have scientists spread throughout Florida and then also in the Bahamas and along the Belize-Mexico border. So the scientists you could think of as kind of satellites out doing their work. And then we have like a central office.
Okay, so they go out, they do their work, and then they bring the data back to the central office.
Yeah, and we partner also with universities and give grants also. So at this time, there's, I believe, over 20 ongoing projects on bonefish sharpen and permit.
What are some of the projects that our listeners can kind of identify with that would help them better understand what the BTT does?
Okay. One major project is our tarpon acoustic tagging, and that's sponsored by Maverick Boatworks. And so that consists of tagging tarpon as small as 5 or 10 pounds up to the, you know, giant fish, implanting an acoustic transmitter. And then whenever the fish swims by a receiver, there's an array that a lot of different partners manage, about 4,000 in the Keys and then up the mid-Atlantic. So whenever a tagged fish swims by one of those receivers, it sends a unique ping. And so basically the scientists are able to chart their movements over about 5 years, because that's roughly how long the batteries last in the transmitter.
That's incredible.
Yeah, so that data is providing us with a lot of knowledge and new information on what size fish are when they're making these epic migrations. You know, it was believed for a long time that only the really, really big fish underwent those long travels, but they've tagged fish in that 45, 50-pound range even swimming that far.
You can track them about over 5 years because of the battery life.
Yeah, so the more old-school way of tagging was with satellite tags that were outside the body. But the problem was they lasted sometimes only months or less than a year. But so these new acoustic transmitters are surgically implanted in the fish's abdomen, and the battery life is 5 to 7 years.
So do you actually have to catch them and like take them out of the water and do a quick little surgical implant, or is it just
like
the tag that you're used to seeing on TV?
So there's actually a very simple surgical procedure that the guides and our scientists will do. So we're heavily reliant on guides. We have a great network of guides who donate their time. So basically, the tarpon is brought boat side, put in a sling to keep it wet so it's never brought into the boat. And then it's rolled over. The scientists make a simple incision, put the transmitter in, and stitch it up.
Okay.
Yep.
Takes just a couple minutes.
Yep.
Then. And then permit are a newer species to the BTT. But how long have you guys been fostering conservation for permit?
It began with bonefish and tarpon, and then permit came in, I believe, within about 5 years or so. As you know, the popularity of permit as flat species has really increased dramatically over the years.
Yep.
We have a similar study going with permit that's sponsored by Costa, called Project Permit. And so the same technology, we're tagging permit with acoustic transmitters. And the big question there was, what is kind of the range and where are permit going to spawn? So we've tracked them going to these offshore wrecks and forming similar aggregations there, and then going back to their home flats.
We're going to take a short commercial break to hear from Tim O'Neill of Norvice.
What makes the Norvice different than another system?
There are a lot of rotary fly tying vices out there. The Norvice is the only vice that will truly spin when you tie flies, and there's a big difference between rotating a vice slowly and spinning it at a bit of a faster RPM. And being able to spin the hook on a zero axis rotations opens up a lot of doors for us in the world of fly tying.
Tell me about the introduction of colors to the Norvice system.
When we obtained the company from Norm, he said to me just a very, very short statement. He said, you know, I always thought a colored Norvice would be a cool item. We brought out five colors: Radical Red, Sunset Orange, Shamrock Green, Liberty Blue, and Royal Purple. We have five colors along with the black that you're accustomed to seeing with Norvice, and we've been doing very well with those.
To find more information and their online store, visit nor-vice.com.
Yeah, so that the acoustic telemetry has been really groundbreaking as far as the new knowledge learned from it.
How are bonefish doing as a species?
In Florida, so BTT was founded in response to the now famous decline of bonefish in the 90s. And there's been encouraging news recently where some newer size classes of fish have been seen on the flats. So there's a lot of small bonefish around in the Keys right now.
Okay.
So I think the main takeaway there is that's definitely a step in the right direction, but it's still unclear all of the factors that contributed to the decline in the first place.
Yeah.
And so, of course, there still need to be answers so that we don't see a similar crash like that ever again.
Speaking of the founding of the Bonefish Tarpon Trust, when was the BTT founded and how?
It was founded in 1998 in Key Largo, Florida, so Upper Florida Keys, and it was actually founded by a group of concerned anglers. And then those founding members, you know, brought in their circles, you know, fishing circles, other conservation-minded anglers, and from there it took off.
So at first it was just kind of like a local conservation kind of grassroots movement.
Yeah, it was people who were saying, hey, this fishery is not what it used to be, and somebody's got to figure out what's happening here. And at that time, as I was saying earlier, there's very little known about bonefish, so they funded some initial studies on bonefish to see, you know, we need to learn more about these fish if we're even going to figure out how to conserve them for the future.
So it's just a bunch of anglers getting together and say, hey, let's have like a...
Yeah, throwing their money in the hat and let's get these studies started and see what's going on.
So really that foundation was in that science almost.
Yeah.
That's kind of what...
So it's always been science-based. Yep. So every, policy position and conservation position and plan, it's all based in science. So
about how many was in that group at the time? Just a handful of people?
Yeah. Yeah, but then it quickly, that initial group, you could say, I believe it was around a dozen, and then they kind of brought in more and more. So
when you go out to, say, IFTD, what is your role? What are you trying to accomplish? You're gathering new members, but why the tackle dealers? Like, what about the fly shops that you're trying to attract to BTT?
So IFTD is a great opportunity for us to visit with a lot of our sponsors, Farbank, Orvis, Sims, Sage, part of Farbank. And then as far as the fly shops goes, there's a number of fly shops who are members of BTT as a shop.
Okay.
And then we also have, we're fortunate that a lot of outfitters, Frontiers, Yellow Dog, other travel agencies will donate trips, which we can then sell in silent auction, raising money for research.
Okay.
And in a lot of cases, guides will take our scientists out for the sole purpose of going and tagging fish.
Okay.
For like the tarpon acoustic study or project permit.
So when you're going to a major sponsor like Orvis, who advertises here in the journal and then has a lot of relationships with the Bonefish Tarpon Trust, when you go to kind of renew this relationship, what are some of the high points that you can tell them that, hey, this is what we've accomplished as part of, your support? Here's what we're looking to accomplish even more of, but here's our results from the past.
Well, I think a big part of the corporate support is, I think all the great companies in this industry are very aware that without conservation, there will be no fishing in the future, and that goes from boat manufacturers to fishing lodges to rod manufacturers to travel agencies. So everybody is really on the same page with how important the conservation is. So as far as, by species, a lot of it is just the knowledge that's been gained since then. And then BTT helped in Florida, for example, make bonefish and tarpon catch and release, which is obviously a huge win for conservation of any species. And then there's projects from everything from juvenile tarpon habitat restoration to providing data that was used to establish national parks in the Bahamas by BNT and the Bahamian government. So
no kidding.
We provided tagging and tracking data to identify vital habitats, including spawning sites and pathways that should be protected. So you can think of BTT as starting in the Upper Keys, over 20 years ago. And since that time, it's expanded throughout the Caribbean. So we're now active in Florida, Belize, Mexico, Bahamas, and then are working with collaborators in Cuba as well.
Yeah, that's awesome.
The Fly Fishing Show Tour travels the country every winter. From January until March, the largest consumer fly fishing shows in the world will be in one of six locations. The regular stops are Marlboro, Mass., which covers the New England area, Edison, New Jersey, which is the New York, New Jersey, Mid-Atlantic States show, Atlanta, Georgia, Denver, Colorado, Pleasanton, California, the Bay Area show, and finally back to where it all started in Pennsylvania at the Lancaster show. These shows are super fun events that are packed with teaching, presentations, and everything you could ever want to know or see in fly fishing. Find all the details at flyfishingshow.com.
I'm looking at your current issue of the journal, and you have an amazing article on CN Con, which is in the Ascension Bay area of Mexico.
That's right.
Yeah, and we were just talking that I actually just came back from there. It was with Pesca Maya. You've got some great spots that I've actually visited right here in this beautiful article.
How was the fishing for you?
For me, I caught 10 different first species.
Nice.
I had never caught a bonefish, so I caught my first bonefish.
It's a great place to do it.
Yeah, I caught my first permit. I caught two permit. Caught a bunch of bonefish. I caught a giant Jack Crevalle.
Nice.
Bunch of different snappers. Mm-hmm. Only fish that eluded me was the tarpon.
Well, I think you could get one of those pretty easily.
Yeah, I get one of those. I'm actually heading down to Belize. Cool.
So, nice.
Going to go fish down in Belize this May. And
very cool.
Have a good shot of getting my first tarpon, so I'm excited about
that. I'm sure
that.
It'll happen, yeah.
Yeah, I appreciate it.
If you check permit off the list, I'm sure you can get a tarpon.
Right. Before we jump back in, I want to finish up on some of the more work that you guys are doing with the BTT. I want to talk about you, Nick, because you've got this great job with the BTT. I see you traveling a bit. How did you get involved in the fly fishing industry?
So I became a fly fishing guide for 1 year out of college. I went to Duke for undergrad, which is in the middle of North Carolina, so there wasn't great trout fishing around. It was about 3 hours away.
Yep.
And then got really into it early in college, and then guided for a year before I went to graduate school for writing, for a master's in creative writing, and then I guided in the summers during grad school near Asheville, North Carolina, so in the Blue Ridge Mountains. And then after grad school, I guided full-time for 6 years and then began freelance writing for more outdoor outlets and fly fishing magazines. And then from there, have just been able to, you know, travel to some incredible places, write about conservation, interview some amazing people. And
Yeah.
And then after guiding 6 years, I started at BTT as membership and communications manager. And then since that time, I've become director of communications and marketing, and then taken over editing the magazine, which is a great experience. Every time we make one, I learn a lot, you know.
And the magazine comes out quarterly?
Actually, just twice a year at this point. Yeah.
So twice.
It comes out in March and September.
Fantastic.
Yep.
You said you started guiding out of college.
Yeah, guided a year out of college before grad school, and then guided 6 years after grad school.
So you were a guide fairly quickly there. But
for trout, not saltwater.
For trout. But where did that passion come from for fly fishing? I mean, how long you'd been fly fishing before that?
I really got into it early in college. I'd always fished growing up, but that's when I kind of went nuts with it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, to me, it's a great way to spend time outdoors and, you know, be kind of enjoy the resource. And I think trout, and like a lot of these species, don't live in ugly places. So it's been incredible just to go to the landscapes and settings where they live, too.
And you grew up in North Carolina?
Yep.
And then you live in Florida now?
Yeah, I'm in Miami now.
Okay.
Yep.
And I noticed that you almost travel as much as I do here. So
yeah,
you're doing pretty good.
You're doing pretty. I'm trying to keep up with you.
I'm not complaining, but I do see that you have been to a few spots. So why don't you share with some of our listeners about some of your journeys?
Sure. Let's see. One of my favorites is definitely, I'd say, Golden Dorado in Argentina. It's a great destination for anybody looking to do it. It's a really interesting mix of a fish that's, you know, tarpon, bass, very predatory. They jump.
Yeah.
Really cool colors on them.
Where did you stay?
That was in Itati in Argentina. So that's in the jungle.
Oh, wow.
Yep. So, and the river's the Upper Paraná, which it's the border there between Paraguay and Argentina.
Where do you fly into?
You fly into Buenos Aires, and then you fly into Corrientes, about an hour and a half flight from BA.
And what was the motivation? Like, just wanted to go down there and check out what fishing in the jungle, or what was that?
Yeah,
all about?
That was the first time I went was just, it had always been a bucket list trip. And then the second time I hosted a group there.
Okay.
Yep. And then I've also hosted some in Patagonia as well for trout.
You love South America?
Yeah. You know, anyone
that's your jam?
Has fished Chile or in Argentina, I mean, there's just so much going on there, from Golden Dorado in the north of Argentina to, you know, of course, incredible trout fishing in Patagonia. I need to make it over to Iceland
Let's go. We've got a couple trips planned. You're welcome.
Let's do it. Yeah.
All right. I'm going to hold you to that. So, all right. Well, let's kind of flow back. So you get this great career. You came out of guiding. You started, in kind of like marketing, communications, mm-hmm. and then you kind of worked up to run the magazine and director of marketing communication. What would you say is one of the biggest challenges that the bonefish tarpon permit fishery faces today?
I want to let you know about the new travel section we have on the flyfishingjourneys.com website. Our goal and what we are passionate about is being on this fly fishing journey with you. That's why we go to the fly fishing shows and why we have started group travel with you. For the last 2 years, we have brought select friends and listeners to Iceland for curated hosted trips. We continue that with 2 weeks in Iceland this year, which are sold out, and 3 weeks in Iceland in 24, which are starting to fill up. These trips are pre-vetted for the best weeks on the best rivers. All the accommodations and details have been thought out and handled for our guests' convenience and enjoyment. This July, my good friend Tim Kamisa and I are headed to Alaska for some salmon fishing in the Bristol Bay area. I head back to Alaska in August to experience two additional lodges, new rivers, and different runs of salmon. July is more kings, chums, and sockeye, where August the target is silvers. Our goal here in Alaska is similar to Iceland, getting you the most hands-on current information. We don't have any Alaska trips to offer in 23, but stay tuned for more information for 24.
As far as like what we're working on,
well, just as like as a species, as a species, in the waters and with BTT, what are some of the things that faces a challenge for the species?
I think the hands down in Florida, the biggest threat is water quality issues, including degradation of the Everglades, which are, you know, the Everglades provide nursery habitat for tarpon and snook. And so what's happened to the Everglades over the past decades is just, you know, a continued decline. So there's many sponsors here at this show who are very involved in Everglades restoration as well. And so I think that's the big push in Florida, is getting that natural flow from Lake Okeechobee to flow all the way down to Florida Bay.
Yeah.
And basically it's a giant plumbing problem as far as too much fresh water going to the east and west coast and then not enough going south to Florida Bay.
Right.
So as a result, you have too much, you have hypersaline conditions in Florida Bay and then too much fresh water on the east and west coast of Florida, which causes algal blooms, which you've probably read about the last few summers. There's a state of emergency declared only a couple summers ago because of that.
Yeah, giant green algae blooms.
Yeah, so it's not just an issue that is affecting the fish. It's affecting people,
people getting sick, birds falling out of the air,
and
just massive fish.
Yeah, contributing to red tide. Yeah.
Yeah, so it's really a huge issue right now. And sometimes you'll look at these marinas and they'll just be full of gunk and green algae and it's just be dead.
Yep. Now, once that's, you know, coated, that's, I mean, think of how that works its way up the food chain.
Yeah. Toxic.
Yep. Toxic blue-green algae.
Yeah, it's bad. So the idea is to stop having it go through like the St. Lucie River and the Chattahoochee River and have it go right down the middle.
Yeah, so the Everglades are like a filter, and historically before there was development, you know, the water flowed naturally from Lake Okeechobee, worked its way through the Everglades, came out in Florida Bay. Some of course went to the east and west coast, but because of water diversion and a number of other reasons, there's not enough fresh natural water called sheet flow going through the river of grass.
Yeah.
Which is the nickname for the Everglades, you know, where it's just, you know, miles wide and inches deep.
Yeah. So, and so trying to find grass these days, I heard, is tough.
Yeah. I mean, the Everglades, it's definitely a battle. I mean, I think the past few years, more and more people have become aware of what needs to happen, both in the U.S. and even internationally.
Right.
And more people are stepping up and supporting groups like Now or Neverglades, or, you know, other groups. You know, Orvis has been very active in that fight for the Everglades. So,
So do we have a solution? I know there's some different organizations, like the Bull Sugar would be one, is kind of fighting for water quality in Florida. Is BTT involved in that, or is that kind of okay?
Yep. So the Now or Neverglades coalition that BTT has been in is a number of groups like that: BTT, Bull Sugar, Captains for Clean Water.
Yep.
It's a lot of different groups with different kind of niches all working together.
That's awesome.
For Everglades restoration.
Yeah.
You know, and then a lot of the great companies, you know, here at the show are supporting that too.
Do we see a potential solution in sight, or is it just more battling and fighting with the politicians?
Well, the big push now is to get the reservoir built south of the lake, which will at least help to filter some of the water going south and restore some of the sheet flow.
Yeah.
So there's definitely been a lot of progress made over the past year.
Yep.
But, you know, Still have a long way to go.
Yeah.
But I would say that's the most important, you know, fight right now, conservation-wise, in Florida, because that's vital to the health of the fisheries, especially tarpon.
Okay. And then as a organization, what are some of the challenges that you guys face at BTT, like some of the struggles? They say, hey, man, we need more of this, or we need more money. But what are some of the challenges you guys face as an organization?
Well, I think that as you expand, there's so many issues in all the places where we work.
Right.
You know, I mean, we're in, you know, working along the Belizean-Mexican coastline in the Yucatan, and there's just rampant development there, too. Mangroves are being cut down. There's so much development. You know, mangroves are vital to the flats fishery for permit, tarpon, and bonefish.
Yep.
So part of it there is, you know, educating guides, anglers, politicians, other stakeholders about how valuable the flats fishery is from an economic standpoint.
Right.
Which is in the millions of dollars. You know, we just did a recent study in the Bahamas. We hadn't done one since, I believe, 2010, and the flats fishery in the Bahamas is $169 million annually is what it contributes to the national economy.
Wow, yeah.
So, you know, when you see the devastation from Dorian, for example, I mean, that's a major blow to the industry as a whole.
Well, you got that Bahamas Strong hat on. I got one myself when I renewed my membership at IFTD.
Yep.
What does that hat signify, and how can people participate in Bahamas Strong?
So Bahamas Strong was our push. A lot of the companies here have done so much to help raise funds for the Bahamas. So we had a fund too. We established with Bahamas National Trust, which is our longtime partner in the Bahamas. So we've raised over $350,000 to benefit guides and lodge staff who were impacted by the storm. So I think if you were to kind of sum it up, it's just that spirit that, you know, this fishing community is going to rally, and you know, it'll come back better than ever, I'm sure.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, great job with that.
Yeah, thanks.
What can somebody do to participate in the Bonefish Tarpon Trust? Like, how do you become a member?
Yep.
What are the member benefits, and what are their member dollars go for?
Yep. So 86% of our funds go toward the mission, which I'm very proud to say. So we're very efficient. And then our memberships range from $35 military student all the way up to really as high as you want to go. I mean, the highest we have listed is $5,000.
Yep.
So those membership benefits include yearly subscription to the journal.
Yep.
Our magazine, e-newsletter, online subscription to the Angling Report, and then also some great perks from Yeti, Orvis, Sims, other partners.
So you have the $35 military student, and then you have the $50 just regular member.
Yep.
And then a premium member at 100, and then conservation sponsor.
Yep.
Once you get past like maybe $100, you're going to be into more member and sponsorship.
Yeah, so as those levels go up, you know, we partner with Orvis to provide Helios rods. We have TFO rods, pen rods and reels for people who are more on the conventional side.
Yep.
And I think that's the main thing I would stress is that it's BTT's definitely not fly only. You know, there many people fish for tarpon not fly fishing, which
right.
is totally fine. And so a lot of it is just getting everyone to rally under one banner that regardless if you're fly or spin, you know, it's all about the fish.
Supporting the conservation of the fisheries.
Yeah.
So if I sign up online, I mean, say if you're not coming to a show,
mm-hmm.
the best place to sign up is online.
Yep. It's easy to remember. It's btt.org.
And then if I sign up for, say, like a $50 or $100 membership, what do I expect in return? I get, like, the magazine mailed to my house twice a year?
Yep, you'll get the magazine. You'll get the membership benefit mailed out. You'll get the e-newsletter, subscription to the Angling Report, which is very nice of them, too, to donate those subscriptions for us former members. So
very cool.
Yep.
Well, Nick, I appreciate your time coming out and speaking to us on the Bonefish Tarpon Trust and a bit about your story.
Yep.
And hopefully we can do it again sometime.
Yeah, sounds good. Thanks, Rob. Appreciate it.
You've been listening to Fly Fishing Journeys with your host, Rob Giannino. To be notified of new episodes, subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, or Google Podcasts. You can follow us on YouTube, Facebook, and Instagram. For past episodes, check out flyfishingjourneys.com. Fly fishing is a journey, and we're glad you're on this journey with us.